you're listening to Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio or online at kpfa.org. My name is Sasha Lilly, sitting in for C.S. Song. The great Polish independent Marxist historian Isaac Deutscher was one of the most important radical writers and thinkers of the 20th century. He was born 100 years ago in Galicia, Poland, then part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and died 40 years ago yesterday, on August 19, 1967, in Rome. A heretic and renegade, he was expelled from the Polish Communist Party for his opposition to its stance of branding social democrats as fascists at a moment when Nazism was ascendant. Deutscher is perhaps best known for his trilogy about the life of the Soviet leader Leon Trotsky, titled The Prophet Armed, The Prophet Unarmed, and The Prophet Outcast, which Graham Greene called one of the greatest biographies in the English language. To talk about Deutscher's writings and his legacy, I'm very pleased to be joined by radical scholar and historian Mike Davis. He's the author of many books, including Magical Urbanism, City of Quartz, and most recently, In Praise of Barbarians, Essays Against Empire, published by Haymarket Books. He's on the editorial board of the New Left Review and was a friend of Deutscher's wife, Tamara. Mike, welcome to Against the Grain.
My pleasure.
So tell us in a nutshell why you believe on the anniversary of his death, those of us on the left need to be familiar with the work of Isaac Deutscher.
Well, Deutscher is in many ways, or was in many ways, the moral and intellectual bridge between the generation of 1917 of classical revolutionary socialism and the new left of the 1960s. He also represents a deepening and continuation of the critical project undertaken by people like Viktor Serge, Trotsky himself, and exile, trying to understand the tragedy of the Soviet Union under Stalin, but also trying to understand, which is the particular mission of Isaac Deutscher, the contradictions and hopes and possibility of the Soviet Union, particularly after the death of Stalin in 1953. He gave people in the 1960s, at least for those of us who were willing to listen, an interpreted standpoint, an analytic context that was different from any of the received orthodoxies on the American left.
So why do you think it is that on the centenary of his birth, there aren't celebrations of Deutscher in this country?
Well, I mean, first of all, these are craven times. A whole generation, heroic generation of the American left has passed with little commemoration. But I think also in Deutscher's case, it was precisely because he was a heretic. He had the distinction of being simultaneously denounced by leading Cold Warriors, social democrats, supporters of the Soviet Union, and Orthodox Trotskyists. There was never a Deutscherite party or a Deutscherite faction, and I think the sheer independence of his thought and the critical sharpness of his mind did not predispose people to be his followers. All the more important, of course, to rediscover his work and to rediscover his analysis.
Well, tell us about Isaac Deutscher's origins and the milieu that he came out of.
Well, he was born in Galicia, not too far from Auschwitz, studied in Krakow, which was the former capital of Austria and Poland, and great center, one of the greatest centers of Jewish culture. His father hoped that he would become a great rabbi. As a teenager, he was a stunning poet with a large audience, and then went to study in Warsaw and quickly joined the underground Communist Party. Poland in the late 1920s was under the dictatorship of Marshal Pasolsky, and the communists were in fact deep underground. And he became the major editor of the underground publications of the Polish Communist Party, and then went to Moscow in 1931, where he was offered several academic positions in the Soviet Union.
And he, not long after that time, in 1933, he was expelled from the Polish Communist Party. Tell us about that, and maybe you can describe for us the broad political context in which this all took place.
Well, first of all, the Polish Communist Party itself was a direct descendant of the Social Democratic Party led by Rosa Luxemburg, and inherited some of her independence of thought and critical tradition. It was a small party, but it was a smart party with a stellar group of intellectuals and thinkers. And in the late 20s, as I say, was deep underground combating a very dictatorial regime, something almost like Pinochet in Poland. But the communist leadership at the time considered the regime fascist, and Deutscher thought this was a huge mistake. And Deutscher and others in the party who banded together as an opposition were opposed to the so-called left period line of the Communist International that denounced socialists as social fascists, that made no distinction between real fascists like the Italians or above all the German Nazis and dictatorships. And Deutscher's crime, for which he was eventually expelled from the party with others in 1932, was his insistence on the urgency of creating unity in the workers' movement amongst communists and socialists against the peril of the Nazi Party in Germany. And this was well before he was in contact with Trotsky or in any sense thought himself a Trotskyist. He was part of a larger current in European communism that was horrified by the sectarian line of the Comintern, and with like-minded socialists was desperately struggling to put up a united front against the menace of Hitler.
And you just spoke about the Comintern, the Communist International, which was the international organization that had been initially founded by Lenin and had evolved through the struggles in the Soviet Union in the 1920s. And I think to understand Deutscher's trajectory, one needs to understand what those struggles were within the Soviet Union and the larger Communist International.
Well, I mean, so much of Deutscher's life, his great work in the 50s, was the reconstruction of the struggle that occurred in the 1920s in the Soviet Union. Lenin, at his death, in the last year of his life, waged a desperate struggle to prevent the secession of Stalin as the secretary of the party from taking over the party. And by the middle 20s, virtually the entire old guard of the Bolshevik Party had come together in a series of oppositions, but most importantly, something called the Left Opposition against Stalin. These were all the people, Zinoviev, Kamenev, Rykov, Tomsky, Bukharin, and so on, who were later shot by Stalin in 1937 and 1938. And in the early 20s, and up through Lenin's death, and even for a few years after that, great dissent and public discussion was still possible in the Soviet Union, but by 1927, 1928, that began to become impossible. And Trotsky, of course, was first put into external exile, and then, beginning of the 30s, kicked out of the Soviet Union. And Stalin began to increasingly consolidate his control over the party, culminating in the year 1937, where he executed literally tens of thousands of communists.
Right, and Deutscher himself wrote about the Moscow trials, which was the place where Stalin put his former colleagues on trial for treason and for fomenting counter-revolution.
And of course, these were nightmarish trials because people were forced to confess. It was not enough simply to arrest and kill people. People were induced to confess by being told that the future of socialism in the Soviet Union depended on their confession, their false confession. And out of misguided, you know, loyalty, people confessed to, you know, the most monstrous caricatures, great revolutionaries did. And this is a period, of course, when Trotsky was the most magnificent Trotsky, in a way, was absolutely suited to, you know, this role of the what Deutscher called the prophet outcast, you know, fighting to defend the honor and the, you know, the legacy of the revolution, the truth of the revolution against the falsifications and lies of Stalin. But what's so interesting about Deutscher as a historian, and Deutscher as a partisan of Trotsky, is that his magnificent trilogy, his biography, is in no sense a hagiographic biography. He can be very critical of Trotsky at times, and he fundamentally disagreed with Trotsky's decision to try and create a new communist international, the so-called Fourth International.
Right, a new international organization. And Deutscher's argument was what? That it was the times were too bleak to embark on such a project?
Well, yes, and that the Communist International and the Communist Parties still had such a large hold, huge hold, on advanced sectors of the working class. One of the things that's most important about Deutscher as a historian is his exacting attention to social forces, the social forces that underlay the personalities and underlay, you know, the biographies. And he thought that Trotsky, for heroic and understandable reasons, was making a grievous mistake by attempting to create a new international when, in fact, it was a period of defeat, of defensive struggle, and when advanced workers everywhere still believed in the mythology of Stalin's Russia, of the five-year plan. And this was typical of the opinions that so often separated Deutscher from the sectarian left in Europe and the United States.
Well, speaking of the social forces that you just touched on, Trotsky made a parallel between the Russian Revolution and the French Revolution, and that parallel was then expanded by Deutscher in the Trotsky trilogy. Can you explain for us that argument, what the parallel was and how it was used as a sort of analytical tool to understand how the promise of the Russian Revolution, which, you know, so many people had put their hopes in, had turned into something that was in so many ways horrific?
Well, I mean, in both cases, the great French Revolution of 1789 and the 1917 Revolution, the process of defending the revolution, in the first case against the, you know, the crown might of Europe, in the second, you know, case against intervention by almost a dozen foreign powers, the very process of defense of the revolution dispersed, disorganized, destroyed much of the social base of the revolution, particularly in the Russian case. And Deutscher builds on Trotsky's own analysis of this. You know, Trotsky showed how by the end of the Russian Civil War in 1921, industrial production was a small fraction of what it had been in 1912. Workers were either in party positions, unemployed, or died in battle. The Soviet working class of the early 1920s was sociologically very different. It was a peasant working class. Much the same thing had happened in the course of the French Revolution. Deutscher even extends the analogy back to the Cromwellian Revolution, the English Revolution of 1640. But at the same time, Deutscher argued more than Trotsky was prepared to, that even in its most degenerated and despotic form, you know, even Napoleon as emperor or Stalin virtually is new czar, although many of the ideals and most important democratic processes of the revolution have been destroyed, the revolution still preserved a certain progressive dynamic, certainly in the case of Napoleonic Europe with its, you know, reforms of laws and its overthrow of monarchies. But Deutscher also believed that Stalinism would not outlive Stalin, and that there were other forces stemming from Stalinist modernization, stemming from the five-year plan and its huge enlargement of working class and literacy that would eventually transform the Soviet Union. He was of the opinion that capitalism couldn't be restored in the Soviet Union. The revolution was unfinished, and he believed that new forces would emerge from the labor movement and above all, from youth. That would reinvigorate socialist opposition in the Soviet Union. And, of course, tragically, that didn't turn out to be the case.
Right, and we'll speak a little later on about that. Trotsky also wrote a biography of Stalin. Tell us about that.
Well, this was a quite extraordinary thing to do for both Trotsky and for Deutscher as a supporter of Trotsky. And both of them made heroic efforts not to succumb to the, you know, to the distaste of the project, to their hatred of.
And you're mentioning that Trotsky also wrote a biography of Stalin.
Trotsky also characterized, Stalin too. Deutscher's book was his first big book and made quite a splash when it was published in 1949 or 1950. In retrospect, I don't think you could say it's successful in any way is the biography of Trotsky. And the problem is not only that, you know, the question of affinity, that Deutscher obviously sympathetic to Trotsky and also greater access to documents. But Stalin is simply perhaps the most enigmatic figure of the 20th century and an enormously difficult figure to understand. On one hand, you know, his monstrous crimes and huge defeats that were his fault at the beginning of the war. On the other hand, he's probably unquestionably the shrewdest and smartest of the Allied wartime leaders. What Deutscher was actually doing was writing a triptych. And when he died in the spring of 1967, he was in the midst of working on a huge biography of Lenin, which he actually thought would be his greatest work. So his real life work would be these huge mural like portraits of the three most important characters in the Russian Revolution and the Soviet Union.
And speaking about one part of that, maybe the most successful dimension was this three-part biography of Leon Trotsky. When I interviewed the radical British writer and filmmaker Tariq Ali, I asked him about the importance for him of Isaac Deutscher and the Trotsky trilogy, and I want to play just a brief edited clip of that conversation.
Well, Isaac Deutscher was a remarkable figure. His son of a rabbi in Poland, self-educated, came as an exile to Britain, speaking only Polish, taught himself English, and became one of the finest writers of English prose. His history, his trilogy of Trotsky, is a literary masterpiece. And even if you don't agree with his estimate of the Russian Revolution or the leading figures in it, it's a book worth reading because it is one of the most beautifully and exquisitely written books around. Reading Isaac Deutscher completely opened my eyes. I had come from Pakistan, an Asian country where the communist tradition was very strong. And even though instinctively I knew there were lots of things wrong with the Soviet Union, one couldn't theorize them in isolation. So reading Isaac Deutscher, when I did, completely transformed my understanding of that revolution and what had actually happened. Both the way he wrote and what he wrote, the combination was just amazing. And I can sort of, when I think back on it, I can feel the intellectual excitement that this was something really new, that doors were being opened for one to be able to think for oneself.
And that was Tariq Ali in 2005 speaking about Isaac Deutscher on this program. So, Mike Davis, as a historian, how do you estimate the importance of Deutscher's trilogy on Trotsky?
Well, it's difficult to think of another 20th century biography which combines the classic elements of great tragedy. And Tamara Deutscher used to talk about how when Isaac was writing the Trotsky trilogy in the 50s, how he always kept Shakespeare and Shakespeare's tragedies by his bedstead. with, at the same time, such almost breathtaking political intellectual landscapes, his reconstruction of the debates amongst the Bolsheviks against the social background of a country that almost was destroyed by the First World War and the Civil War, and to understand the moral and historic stakes, and above all, the uncompleted nature, the unfinished nature of the process and the lies. Deutscher, above all, was trying to convey to his readers that not only were these struggles and debates of immense importance to humanity, but they were ongoing, which is why he titled the incredible book he wrote in 1967, his last book, The Unfinished Revolution, which was a perspective for the possibility of profound social change in, you know, in the Soviet Union. So this is not biographer as mortician. This is biographer as combatant, but a biographer capable of the kind of detachment and critical standpoint that he could, when needed, separate himself from the subject, even when the subject was as overwhelming as Leon Trotsky.
Well, given that he was a partisan, what was his relationship to organized Trotskyism?
It was a conflictual relationship, almost without exception, for two reasons. One is because he did not endorse the formation of the Fourth International, and quite frankly, he saw it as a dead end. This is not because he didn't believe in small socialist groups, or because he had ceased to believe in socialist organizing. On the contrary, when he came to the United States in 65 and then for longer visits in 66, he hammered away at the importance of the student movement and intellectuals forging ties with rank-and-file labor in the United States and rebuilding socialist politics. But he did not accept this kind of version of the apostolic secession from Lenin to Trotsky, or from the Third International to the Fourth International. He also fell out with other dissident groups, including Tony Cliff and Hal Draper and the people around the independent socialist clubs, who thought he was far too soft on the bureaucracy, because he attached importance. He had a kind of dialectical view that what was happening in the Soviet Union in the 60s was a combination of halting but important reformist attempts at the top and rebellion from the bottom of society. And he thought these reform attempts at the top opened vital spaces for workers, students, intellectuals to reassert themselves. And traditional Trotskyists and dissident Marxists, many of them had come to believe in a kind of Big Bang theory where Stalinism would have to be overthrown by something like a 1917 revolution. So for all these reasons and more, Deutscher was both a great influence on the New Left individually, but he was often the butt of ruthless criticism and often very, very unfair attacks, labeling him as, he was labeled on one hand by Cold Warriors as a supporter of Stalinism and by loyal pro-Moscow, communists as a CIA agent, and by sections of the Trotskyist left as an apologist for the new bureaucracy.
Yes, that sounds thankless. The program is Against the Grain on KPFA on Pacifica Radio. I'm speaking with Mike Davis about the legacy of Isaac Deutscher. We're going to take a short music break and be back in a minute.
Thank you.
the program is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. My name is Sasha Lilly. We're speaking today about the life and work of the great Polish Marxist Isaac Deutscher on the centenary of his birth. Deutscher was the author of two monumental biographies of Stalin and Trotsky and was a pivotal and influential socialist writer and critic. And I'm joined by Mike Davis by phone from San Diego to talk about Deutscher. He is a radical scholar, journalist, political activist, urban theorist. He teaches history at UC Irvine and is the author of, among other books, Late Victorian Holocausts. So just before the break, we had been talking about Deutscher's relationship to the movements, the people he was writing about. But I want to just back up briefly and pick up the thread of Deutscher's chronology. He fled Poland in 1939 on the heels of the German invasion, I think just before the German invasion of Poland.
About 6 months before his, and of course his entire family was consumed in the Holocaust in Poland.
So tell us about Deutscher's life in Britain. He had to make ends meet, I think had quite a difficult time breaking into academia. And my father, who taught for many years at the University of Sussex, told me that Isaac Deutscher was to be offered a chair in political science at the university, but it was spiked by the liberal political philosopher Isaiah Berlin, who Deutscher had reviewed unfavorably.
Indeed, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, Deutscher was essentially blacklisted during the 50s when he was working on the Trotsky trilogy, and this imposed very great hardships on the family. Tamara Deutscher, his wife, not only a superlative journalist, but principal collaborator on this project. But Deutscher came in 39. He actually he'd been in the Polish army in the late 20s, doing very dangerous work. Doing communist agitation inside of the Polish army, came to England, and he joined up with the Polish army, which was based in Scotland, but was almost immediately figured out to be a dangerous subversive, so he was put on a labor detail or something like that. When he came to England, he had mastered Russian and French, didn't know a word of English. By 1942, he'd become a regular contributor to, of all things, The Economist. And between 42 and I forget when the Cold War finally ended, his relationship with The Economist, maybe 1949, he wrote something like well over 600 articles for The Economist, contributed regularly to The Observer, and became one of the most well-known political journalists and experts, not just on the Soviet Union, but particularly during the war on European life under the Nazi occupation. And he returned to political journalism whenever he needed to earn an income, but academia remained a will-o'-wisp because of the, essentially the blacklist. Even though people, even Cold Warriors like George Kennan, virtually the father of the Cold War, pronounced his biographies to, he called Isaac Deutscher a great biographer, a great writer. But it didn't mean that Isaac Deutscher could put bread on the table or get an academic job anyway.
Well, speaking of his writing, his journalistic work, as Tariq Ali mentioned in the clip, Deutscher in adulthood became a master of English prose and could be likened to fellow Pole Joseph Conrad. What can you say about Deutscher's prose style and his use of language?
Well, his prose style was very absolutely classical. And like Conrad and others who came as adults to English, they began English not by simply reading, the newspaper or comic books. They began with the classics, and they began with Shakespeare. They began with Trevelyan and the other great biographers, political biographers of the 19th century. So there's a very classical quality to his writing, and it's infused, of course, by a sense of just the moral magnitude of the dimensions of the events he's writing about, by this, you know, these kind of Shakespearean qualities. And this is not just something he imitated, it's something that he apparently thought about very deeply. He read dozens and dozens of books on the philosophy of history and on, you know, tragedy as a you know, genre, you know, searching for the right forms in which to portray these momentous struggles inside the Soviet Union and inside the workers' movement in the 1920s and 30s.
And he was also a great essayist, aside from his monumental biographies and works, and wrote on a wide range of subjects, from George Orwell's 1984 to Freud to being a non-Jewish Jew. What did you... do you have any impressions about him as an essayist, or any of the essays that you think were particularly important?
Well, first of all, remember, he started off as a kind of avant-garde poet. He had a very strong aesthetic sensibility, you know, attuned to modernism, and he unfailingly, you know, kept up to date with this, and it, you know, and informed his work. I suppose of his books of essays, my favorites are Heretics and Renegades, which was a response to The God That Failed and the Confessions of famous ex-communists, where he stakes out the position, you know, of a heretic, of someone who's defending Marxism against its usurpers and, you know, and betrayers. And he was absolutely scrupulous, perhaps far more scrupulous than some of the German Frankfurt School exiles than ever do anything that could be interpreted as becoming a renegade. Particularly arduous process of applying for a visa to the U.S. to go to the Trotsky archives at Harvard, and he refused to engage in any of the semantic games, you know, the State Department expected him to deny his communist path. His Anthology, The Non-Jewish Jew, is a wonderful book, and it recalls not simply the world and contributions of Jewish intellectuals, but it reminds us how absolutely important central Jewish secularism, Jewish radical culture, was in the constitution of modern European culture. And of course, it's written with a great sense of nostalgia, because the whole world he wrote about, the world of his, you know, student days in Krakow, the world of underground agitation amongst the Jewish working class in Warsaw, this is the world, you know, completely gone, disappeared, you know, as you pointed out, within months of his fortunate immigration to London.
Well, as you have mentioned earlier, Deutscher was one of the foremost left critics of the Cold War, and had unusual insight into the Soviet motives and the politics of the larger Soviet bloc. I'd like to play a clip of Deutscher talking about the Cold War, and I wonder if you could set the stage for that clip, as it took place at the first anti-war teach-in at UC Berkeley in 1965, which you attended.
Well, I was an itinerant rabble-rouser, not a student, but just an SDS kid at the time. Considered myself to be a radical populist. Had never heard or really met a communist before. The teaching was quite extraordinary. Deutscher spoke after midnight. He was preceded by Paul Krasner, the realist, and Norman Mailer, who gave these incredible stream of consciousness, quite brilliant, but insane rants. And then suddenly, sometime after midnight, this figure appears with a goatee. And I was so naive at the time, I turned to a friend of mine. I said, "Trotsky's dead, isn't he?" I mean, he's really dead. That's not Trotsky, is it? Deutscher was almost like an apparition. His speech was short, but it's something I've never forgotten. And I think anybody who was there that night, you know, kind of remembers the drama and the magic of that talk.
And now we're going to go to Isaac Deutscher speaking about Soviet foreign policy in the period following Stalin's accord with Churchill and Roosevelt at the end of World War II in front of an audience of students and others at UC Berkeley.
Stalin, who was in his dealings with his own people absolutely unscrupulous and ruthless, Stalin, who was most ruthless and most cruel in dealing with communists, the same Stalin was, in a bizarre or Byzantine way, scrupulous and legalistically scrupulous in his bargains with his bourgeois allies. He claimed the advantage that they had yielded to him, Eastern Europe. He stuck to the letter of his wartime agreements with Churchill and Roosevelt, but he also respected his obligations. He yielded Western Europe. He had resigned from Western Europe. He had committed himself to secure the predominance of the bourgeois order in post-war Western Europe, and he carried out his obligations. Long before the Truman Doctrine was proclaimed, Stalin had very effectively saved Western Europe for capitalism, saved Western Europe from communism. Now, this is no paradox. If you study the post-war history of Europe, you will see that in the post-war conservative clericalist governments, the communists said, as junior partners, they disarmed their own communist resistors who had met in France. They urged the workers to behave moderately, not to demand high wages, to help capitalism in reconstruction. There would have been no restoration of capitalism in Western Europe without Stalin. And we were told that this was communism, that Russia was plotting subversion. If the Russian government, if Stalin's government was plotting anything, it was plotting the restoration of capitalism in Western Europe. In Greece, where according to the gentlemen's agreement, Britain was given a 90% predominance when the Greek communists struggled and were crushed by British tanks, Stalin did not utter even a murmur of protest. The Soviet press didn't for weeks write a word at that time about the civil war in Greece. And this, we were told, was communist subversion. In Yugoslavia, we now know that the communists there under Tito's leadership carried out a revolution against Stalin's obstruction. Stalin did all that he could to prevent them. We know that Mao Zedong in China ordered the last campaigns that were to end in the triumph of Chinese communism and of Chinese communist partisans against Stalin's advice, against Stalin's obstruction. To the end, Stalin urged Mao Zedong to yield to Chiang Kai-shek and to allow his partisans who had fought for 15 years in the hills and from the caves to allow his partisans to be incorporated in Chiang Kai-shek's armies. Happily, Mao Zedong was no Togliatti and no Torres, and went on fighting for the triumph of the Chinese Revolution. I'm saying this being no adherent and no admirer of Mao Zedong's various other policies.
And that was Isaac Deutscher speaking at the first anti-war teach-in at Berkeley on May 21st, 1965, recorded by KPFA. And there, Mike Davis, he makes one of the central arguments that he reiterated throughout his career about the nature of Stalinism.
Well, he also ended that talk by saying, he said, we must restore meaning to the great ideas. The ideas of liberalism, democracy, and communism. Yes, communism. Wow, I was stunned, and I think most of the audience was. It was like a seance with dead revolutionaries and betrayed revolutions, with, you know, all the hopes and dreams of the early 20th century, except, you know, there he was standing before us. And the tragedy, of course, he died. He was in 1967. He was barely 60 years old. And in the midst of what he considered to be his greatest work, the biography of Lenin, and before Brezhnev buried the hopes of socialist reform in Eastern Europe with his invasion of Prague in 1968, which events that Deutscher would have been, of course, one of the keenest and most important critics and analysts of. But if you don't mind, I should point out that the Deutscher's project was actually continued to live through his wife, Tamara Deutscher, and her work.
Right, who was a friend of yours.
She was a friend of all of us at the New Left Review and very, very much our hero. And when I arrived in London in 1980, she was collaborating with Edward Hallett Carr, E.H. Carr, and Robert Davies on their extraordinary, many, many volume history of Soviet Russia. So the Deutscher project, of which she was the collaborator in some sense, probably should have had her name listed as co-author, had a very strong alliance with the Carr and Davis project, which went on through the 80s. Carr died in 82, but Davis continued it. And, of course, in London, Deutscher's spirit and work is very much alive. The Isaac Deutscher Prize, so many people who worked with him and knew him, who continue to honor his memory and learn from his work. Where in the United States, unfortunately, he's a more forgotten figure, I think.
And the program is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. My name is Sasha Lilly. We're speaking about Isaac Deutscher, and my guest is Mike Davis, socialist writer, author of Magical Urbanism, co-editor of Evil Paradises, Dream Worlds of Neoliberalism. Well, you just mentioned Prague Spring, that is the attempt to create socialism with a human face that was crushed by the Soviet Union in 1968 after Deutscher died. Do you think that, it seems that in hindsight he was overly optimistic about the loosening of control in the Brezhnev era and the potential for real reform. How do you think he would have viewed Prague Spring?
He would have viewed it with, I think, the uttermost ferocity, because I think Deutscher, more than almost anyone, would understand that what was at stake in Prague Spring was not only the legitimacy of socialism in Czechoslovakia and Eastern Europe, but the larger struggle for the restoration of socialist democracy and revolutionary tradition in the Soviet Union. In his last year, in late 1966, beginning of 1967, there's already greater pessimism coming into Deutscher's work. It's a lot of the reform spirit of the early 60s of the Khrushchev period had been buried. And I don't think, in retrospect, it would be easy enough to say that he was completely wrong with his belief that there could be a restoration of democracy in the Soviet Union. But the thing about Deutscher that was so outstanding and built on Trotsky's analysis was his detailed current attention to social forces, particularly to the working class and youth and students in the Soviet Union. And he gave a huge importance to the enlargement and the kind of modernization of those social forces and the belief that their voices would be heard. And, of course, from our perspective now, we can see how absolutely catastrophic Brezhnevism and the events of 1968 in Czechoslovakia have been for the future of the left.
Well, we don't have much time left, but I wanted to ask you what you would say to those who might say that after the Cold War and the disintegration of the Soviet Union, that Deutscher is no longer relevant, that he spoke to an era that is now behind us.
On the contrary, Deutscher's work is the key to understanding what happened, the key to understanding 1989 and the recovery of the traditions that he represented and continued and was the tribune of, I think, are essential to our future. I mean, socialism and the left may seem dead as a doornail to some people, but consider what the alternatives were. Unfortunately, we inherited the world that Trotsky predicted in the late 30s, where the real alternatives were choice between democratic, some form of socialist democracy on one hand, and a civilization of barbarism. Of course, in the last instance, it's not merely a matter of reading Deutscher or Trotsky or Rosa Luxemburg. It's a question of making those, you know, ideals come to life and in practice. And in action. And I'm just very grateful that KPFA has done this event and recognized what an important hero of the left Isaac Deutscher was.
Well, we do have a minute or two left, so I want to ask you a bit more about Tamara Deutscher, who really was Isaac Deutscher's close collaborator, a scholar in her own right. Tell us about her contribution, because the Isaac Deutscher, the Deutscher Memorial Prize, which you mentioned, is named after both of them.
Well, I mean, her work is inseparable from his. I mean, the writing may be his, but the research is, in every sense, equally hers. Research that she continued in association with Karin Davis through the 1980s, but she was an extraordinary person. She was, she could be caustic and funny and ironic, and she's a person of just enormous wit. And most of all, I remember when she came back from visiting Poland, which she'd left 30 years, more than that, 40 years before. She was covering Solidarność, and she visited Krakow, and she visited where Isaac had lived as a teenager, and I asked her about it, and she said, you know, it's quite incredible. She says, every synagogue and Jewish building has been restored, but the people are all gone. She says, the spirit is gone. It's nothing but a country of ghosts. It was almost heartbreaking. But she kept her pen sharp till the very end of her life, writing under her own name more frequently than, you know, she had in the 60s and 50s. So she needs recognition as the full collaborator in Deutscher's biographies.
And she died, I believe, in 1980.
In 1990, I think.
Oh, 1990.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been speaking with Mike Davis about the life and legacy of the Polish Marxist historian, journalist, essayist Isaac Deutscher, who died in Rome 40 years ago yesterday at the age of 60. Mike Davis has written many books, including Late Victorian Holocausts and the recent In Praise of Barbarians, Essays Against Empire, published by Haymarket Books. I want to thank you so much, Mike, for being on the program today.
And I want to thank KPFA for being the best thing on the air.
Well, thank you. I also want to thank the Pacifica Radio Archives for providing me with the audio of Deutscher, which was recorded by KPFA. And I'd like to encourage people to check out the website for the wonderful Deutscher Memorial Prize, which is given each year for a book which exemplifies the best and most innovative new writing in or about the Marxist tradition. And that endeavor is, I think, well worth supporting. You can find a link to that site and other resources related to today's program on againstthegrain.org. And This is Sasha Lilly sitting in this week for CS Song. I want to thank Jen Angel for her seamless engineering of this program, and I hope you'll join me again tomorrow.
Against the Grain is produced by C.S. Sung with associate producer Jen Angel. Please visit us online at againstthegrain.org, where you can download audio and find links to show-related resources. We welcome your comments and suggestions by email at againstthegrain@kpfa.org, or you can call us at 510-848-6767, extension 670.
To know, I'm all the way in South Haven, Michigan, and I am so happy to listen to KPFA. So I just want you to know you have a listener way out in Michigan that just loves your radio station because it's so global, and it seems like you guys are dealing with the problems. And I love to hear hope in the world, and you guys give me hope. I appreciate KPFA.
Trying to make it real compared to what...
And it is just about 12 noon, 1 p.m. You're listening to KPFA Berkeley, KPFB Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, and online at kpfa.org. Stay tuned for the Women's Magazine.